This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, we look at reducing the chances you think you have cancer, Twitter's new magic pony, Dropbox's new OCR feature, and everyone being able to live stream to YouTube from their phone. That's all next and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 76, June 26, 2016, sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Again, Derek, looks like a warm evening out there. We had just a very brief sprinkle that came through. We definitely need some more rain. Those of you in the southwestern Ontario area, make sure you get out and water your trees.
Yeah, I think things just flooded in Thunder Bay, so maybe they can send us some of their water. Just throw it on some trucks, make the 14-hour drive down here, you know.
Yeah, not a problem. Not a problem. Exactly. We'll send you our address, and we'll go from there.
Yeah.
So, again, lot of pretty cool stuff again this week, a lot of stories. I also want to give a shout-out again to the Tech DA for the loan of this Snowball Blue mic. That somehow makes my voice sound better, but there you go. So thanks again to him. Okay, let's get right on to it. Looks like we're doing a couple of Google stories first. So I like this first one. Googling medical symptoms may no longer convince you that you're dying. Yeah, I know if people like this, they get a sniffle and they go on Google and they're convinced they now have some rare Amazonian bug that's going to like cause their hand to fall off.
Yeah, so basically what Google's trying to do here is stop the "I have cancer" type folks, where you know, so basically if you type in some symptoms like swollen joints, headache on one side of my head, skin rash, etc., they're going to try and give you rational advice about what it could actually be, which is nice. And I'm sure WebMD is not happy about it, but you know what? It's probably best for everyone. So they got some really nice cards that they've designed here. And you will absolutely still find results for WebMD.com, Health.com, Men'sHealth.com, etc. You'll still find all that stuff. But they're going to try and hedge you off at the pass before you figure out that you have cancer when you don't have cancer.
You don't have alien bugs and stuff. And, you know, anytime they have the boys and girls, I should say, from Harvard Medical School and the Mayo Clinic, they probably know what they're talking about.
Yeah, they've actually got the experts working on this, you know, to give you advice. And apparently it's a big problem because about 1% of searches on Google are health-related queries. And considering how many millions and billions of searches there are, that could be a lot. So Google has actually created millions of digital cards for a wide variety of medical conditions. It's only on in the U.S. right now in English on iOS and Android apps. Plus in Google.com search results on mobile phones and tablets, but it is going to be added to desktop browsers soon, be made available in more languages, and I'm sure Canada will be soon behind because thankfully the same or at least similar health problems we get here are also the ones you'd get in the U.S., I would imagine. So
exactly, it's true. And you know, because I know it's in some ways it's funny, but it's also sad. Start typing in some of the stuff in the autocomplete, some of the stuff that comes up. Yeah, it's rather, so we're not really.
Yeah, if you want, that's a click hole if there ever was one, like just, or, you know, like a rabbit hole in the internet, just start typing in, just, you know, not even the health stuff, just start typing in random things and see what Google's autocomplete for your queries start happening. And remember that is a reflection of what people around you, or at least in your country, are actually searching for their full complete search queries.
So is Donald Trump, let's see here, is he left-handed? Is he married? Is he running for president? Is Donald Trump a alien? No, I had an immigrant came up. That's an autocomplete. Is he an immigrant? Is he an actor? Is he anti-gun?
You know what? Yeah. I don't know why, but for a long time, I thought he was originally from France. And I have no idea why I thought that.
Now, let's not be insulting the French.
I know. I'm sorry. Well, good news. I typed in, is Stuart Clark? And the autocompletes that came up for me are, who is Stuart Clark? And why is Stuart Clark called Sarfraz? Stuart, do you need to tell us something?
That's a new one. I see that one.
He's a former Australian cricketer.
Yeah, that's the one I normally get. And there's Stuart also Rupert a Clark. Dr. Stuart Clark, who's a very well-known astronomer in England. He's kind of the equivalent of, and of course the guy's name is right out of my head, the guy on the Discovery Channel that used to be always on. He's kind of the equivalent
David Attenborough?
There. Yeah, well, it's that sort of idea. So every so often I get join us. Stuart Clark's having a talk about neutron stars at the University of Southampton.
Him and I
correspond quite a bit. I managed to beat him to the name, so he is Dr. Stuart Clark. But yeah, it happens. Yeah, the heck is this Sarfraz?
Well, apparently it has to do with this guy's cricket bowling style.
Oh, the cricket play. Yeah, okay.
It originates from the similarities of his bowling style to Sarfraz Nawaz, who I'm guessing is another cricketer from Pakistan.
Pakistan, yeah. He says, yeah. The next one who calls me Sarfraz gets it in the neck. He's only 34. He was actually a very good player on the national team.
Well, good for
him. I do follow cricket now and again.
Okay, we're not going down the cricket hole, so let's...
No, we're not going on that. We're not going down the sports ball hole.
I just don't want to go down the cricket hole. So instead, we're going to talk about the other Google story, which is
go ahead. Tell us about this one.
Well, so we recall a few months ago when Google said, we are going to kill passwords this year. We're going to find a way. Well, they're on their way. So they're making it much easier now to add two-factor authentication to your account. And if you don't know, two-factor authentication means that you need to authenticate with something you know, usually a password, and something you have, usually a hardware device. In the past, that's been if you're a highfalutin banking client, you could actually get a little hardware thing from your bank that you push a button, and it would generate a random, usually a six-digit code that you'd need to punch into your online banking, or maybe even give it to them at the retail branch. Or there's this thing called the YubiKey. You'd actually plug into your computer, and your computer says, "Oh yeah, the YubiKey is plugged in. That's great. It has all the right code, etc." More recently, obviously, we use our phones because they're there and they're at least somewhat secure, especially if you have a password lock for your screen. So Google's new Google's new two-factor authentication system is called Google Prompt. And so it's going to sit alongside the other ones. You don't have to ditch your Google Authenticator if you're using that, or even text messaging to do that. That's really popular. But you can go into your Google account now, choose Google Prompt as your second factor. And if you have a recent iPhone, iPhone 5S or later, or an Android device, when you're trying to sign into your Google account, it'll actually send a prompt to your phone that says, "Are you in fact trying to log in to this website?" And you can hit yes or no. And that's simple.
That's awesome.
And I think it would work really well.
Yeah, where I like this is particularly if I'm setting up a new computer. Like I use a lot of Gmail and Google services and stuff that ties in. So when you do this, and every time you do a new service like Feedly or whatever, it's going to send you a text thing, which you have to stop and then type in the text, wait for it, and all that. And it's the odd time it's not bad, but this is going to make it a lot nicer and quicker and easier, particularly on setup time. And I can see some people, as you say, they may not want to go to this all the time. They may still want the extra little time it takes to put the number. And particularly when you're setting up a machine, when you've got to do it, like I think the last time, I think it was six. If I set up a machine from scratch, I think I'm going to have to have at least six. And I think they were all Google. I think, no, there was two other services. So make that eight. It's a first world problem, yes, but
yes.
It speeds it up. It's really simpler and it makes a lot of sense. So definitely kudos to this. We really recommend two-factor authentication for anything like this.
It's like, I have two-factor on almost every account I can have two-factor authentication on.
Exactly.
Not all of them, just because it's like, you know what? If you get this account, meh. It's not the end of the world. But yeah, for the most part, certainly my Google accounts, Office 365, I think I have 2FA turned on, stuff like that. And the only thing I will say is that yes, this is obviously faster than than getting a code by SMS or logging into the Google Authenticator app and like, oh, you know, I'm just about to reach the end of this code's lifetime. So I'm just going to wait an extra 5 seconds ago and use the next one. Okay. It's 5-10 seconds. But the thing I dislike the most about using text messaging is that if I'm in my basement, for instance, I might not get it for 30 seconds to a minute because the signal's not very strong, or if there is a signal at all. And so this doesn't rely on that at all. I have great Wi-Fi all around the house, out to my yard. So this would actually really speed things up. Again, first world problem, like you said, but it'll still be really handy.
And it's the same thing as we said before. If it makes it easier and it's more secure, then go for it. People are more and more likely to use it.
Exactly. And that's the best way to increase adoption for sure.
Right. Perfect. Okay, moving on. Now, when I saw this story, Derek, I have to admit, when I read the title, and it's in the show notes, Twitter beefs up machine learning chops, buys Magic Pony. I'm really thinking, okay, did they buy a butcher? Did they buy, you know, is he trying to wind me up? Like,
no.
There's all sorts of, you know, did they kill a unicorn? Like, I'm just, yeah.
Yeah, and honestly,
it's impressive. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm not even going to try and get into the story of why it's called Magic Pony, because it really doesn't make any sense. Like, they tried to make,
exactly.
Like saying like, oh, I found a magic pony, a thing. That's not a thing. I've never heard anybody say that. So anyway, what is really cool is that Magic Pony Technologies, yes, they're actually called Magic Pony Technology.
I so want a business card.
With a unicorn on it. Anyway, apparently they have produced some fantastic algorithms that can improve low quality pictures and videos on the fly by recognizing patterns and textures. And one of the examples here they have on the Ars Technica article is, I think that's, is that Duke Nukem, or is this the guy from?
That is Duke Nukem.
This is Duke Nukem, yes.
From one of the original games.
Yeah, and so they have a highly pixelated face, because that's what we could do back in the 8-bit and 16-bit days. And they've run it through Magic Pony's algorithm, and he looks like a real guy now. Like, this looks like a degraded JPEG GIF, as opposed to a pixel drawing. I'm actually really impressed. And I think the idea is that they've dropped $150 million on Magic Pony for this technology. This is probably more an acquihire than anything else, especially following on buying another machine learning company called Madbits 2 years ago and Wet Lab last year. And I have a feeling that this is going to be put to use all around Periscope and of course, improving bad quality video that's been uploaded to Twitter and maybe improving it a little bit. So that when people are watching it on their phone or their tablet or even on their TV, potentially if they're casting it, it'll look even better than the original did.
Yeah.
And especially when you're looking at live streaming and how data intensive that can be, this could really make things much better there.
Yeah, exactly. And the actual there's a link in our article to an MIT Technology Review article on this back from April, and it's pretty cool. It really goes into details explaining it, and it, you know, and this is they explained the Magic Pony's name comes from a meeting in which the earliest investor described the technology as a magic pony because no one would believe it without seeing it. So that's how they got
What's
it.
I would have gone with pony, magic though? Unicorn.
I think they were confusing magic unicorns, but Anyway, unicorns are cooler, but according to, Pegasus? You know, to some 5-year-olds I know.
Yeah, Pegasus. There you go. Mind you, that name's been taken several times.
It was a kick-ass Battlestar, yeah, exactly.
Oh, I was actually thinking of Pegasus email, but because that's how.
Yeah, that's true as well. But yeah, anyway. That's how old we both are. I remember I used that. God, okay. Speaking of another technology,
Eudora?
Let's not go down that one either.
Eudora, Pegasus, Netscape.
Eudora, Pegasus, God. As I said, we're going to run that hole. Eventually, I'm going to get my Amiga unpacked. Then I'll scare everyone.
Oh, my God.
I know, exactly. But yeah, this
Start
is actually really
some,
cool.
It'll be interesting Oregon Trail. To see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go with this. So, all right, moving on. How much havoc is caused by unwanted radio signals? I was first thinking, the FCC wants to find out. I was thinking, does Fox News count?
Yes. Yes, it
Excellent.
Does. Okay. Yeah, so this is a U.S. story, but ultimately this will actually have huge global implications because exactly. No matter what the results are, the spectrum that's used worldwide is pretty much all the same or really close. So the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, a.k.a. the FCC, is trying to figure out exactly how much trouble we could be causing with radio noise. So there are lots of devices that emit radio frequency energy that could be interfering with radio services and could be increasing the radio spectrum noise floor, which is essentially the sum of all unwanted signals. Apparently, they've been planning to study changes to the noise floor from human-made sources for over the past 20 years. And so they're finally getting around to it, I guess, especially given the glut of stuff that's actually using radio signals. So apparently, it's commonly believed that the noise floor in the radio spectrum is rising as the number of devices in use that emit radio energy grows, says the report. I would tend to agree. And and so now they're looking for, as a first step, they're looking for public input on the proper design of the study. Lots of smart people, I'm sure that will that could actually yield some fruitful results, and input on the radio frequency or the unwanted radio signal problem itself. Good. I'm actually really glad somebody's bothering to study this at all. There are computers, yeah. Phones, tablets. Certainly some high-efficiency lights, fluorescent lights. I don't know if you experience this, but I can hear fluorescent lights. And frankly, it's annoying. It's really annoying. Yep.
There's also, and I've heard from ham radio guys have kind of said what some of the comments are. And we look like, I've played around over the years with software. Radio or SDR radio, defined radio, and those things can throw out a little bit. And yeah, so I think this is good. We definitely have more, whether it's wireless signals or stuff like that, we definitely have more things flying around.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this stuff is built very, very cheaply. So I think part of it could be a quality issue. They're building it cheaply. They're not building proper shielded power supplies, stuff like that. I can see this. So yeah, good on the FCC.
Apparently some LED lights definitely irradiate some noise. I'm not really surprised by that. I think pretty much anything beyond incandescent light bulbs certainly emit some noise, and maybe even incandescents do as well, because you have a little tungsten wire that's being heated up. I wouldn't be surprised if that was emitting just a little bit of noise. And I will say, and I've been through this area, so I know it's true, there's a big swath of the U.S. Down in Virginia, and I think it extends into West Virginia, where the U.S. government has actually mandated no radio signals.
Yeah, that's because there's a big radio telescope there. In fact, I think we talked about it, where they're selling the town. For like, you can buy a town for $1 million.
Oh, I didn't know you could buy the town.
Yeah, but the only problem is you can't have any radio things. You can't have
no internet, no cell phones.
Because it's a big radio telescope there.
Yes. Yeah. And so, and like, that's fine. But fair warning, if you're driving down through the U.S., down to like Florida, for instance, or Georgia or North Carolina, like I was, do not expect to use your phone for several hours because.
Yes.
There are literally no cell phone signals in the area. I didn't feel any different personally. I know that there's some people moving to that area because they're like, oh, all these radio signals are like messing with my brain. If that's the way you feel, that's fine. you know, feel free to try to move there.
Because what it really is the aliens are there and they're going to like those people that live down there. That's it.
It's the lizard people.
Brain food.
The lizard people.
We'll have all the tinfoil people leaving comments now.
Yeah. So, Stuart, I think I'll let you have this one. But the Global Internet Commission is saying, leave cryptography alone and ditch these opaque algorithms that we can't, peer review. Yes!
Exactly. So this is a global commission. It consists of 29 members drawn from various fields and around the world, including policy, government, academia, and civil society.
And it was set up in 2014 by the Chatham House for the UK and the Canadian Centre for International Governance Innovation. Yes, we were a founding member.
Exactly. Now, they must have extra white business cards to fit that on there.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Wrap. Yeah, just wrap the last three. Or just put CCIGI. And people are like, what does that mean? So. And then you get to tell them.
Exactly. So 40-page long, one internet report, high-level strategic advice and recommendations to policymakers, private industry, technical community, and other stakeholders interested in maintaining a healthy internet. Okay, there we go. Big breath after saying all that. So basically, it's more or less saying, just the really high level, it's been saying what a bunch of us have been saying all around. Mm-hmm. Don't screw around with privacy. Don't have back doors. Don't allow that to happen, because guess what? It's not going to work. Mm-hmm. I love the one bit about power of companies as private enforcers of the law. The commission writes, and I quote, private actors should not become the enforcement arm of governments. Any special or secret agreements between governments and private actors to restrict or limit access to internet content or to limit access to communication should be made transparent. Yeah. Like it's, you know, this is for those of us in the game, we know better.
Yeah.
There's always, you know, the other thing is too, is, you know, they're urging member states to agree not to use cyber weapons against core infrastructure of the internet, using nukes against, you know, the water supply.
Yeah.
You know, especially if both countries are using it, not much point. This is a really important report. And again, hopefully certain agencies around the world with three or four may actually listen to this. I'm going to go out on a limb and say probably not, but let's hope so.
If just one person,
at least we can wag their fingers.
If just one person in Ottawa is listening, that's a good start. If somebody in GCHQ is listening, great. That's good. NSA? Sure. I'm not saying anything. Well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not saying anything super controversial here. But yeah, just can
we support our new overlords? Yeah.
It's not like I'm advocating for let us do whatever we want on the internet.
No, exactly.
No, there are absolutely limits. Yes. But can you just let me do my thing? Can I just use the internet in within current legal bounds the way I want to? Like, I'm not trying to plot to kill anybody, so there's no reason why you should need down in the US they were trying to make it legal so that law enforcement could get pretty much whatever you want out of your computer without your consent or without a warrant, which is the big one, like web browsing history,
how often
cookies.
That was used for something not really required for a case.
And that's the problem.
Yes. That was the problem.
Go exactly. Get a warrant.
As usual, someone spoils it for everyone else.
Yeah, just go get a warrant and everybody will be happy.
Exactly. And make sure it's not secret in the end. It's got to eventually expire. Stuff
yes.
Like that. So, exactly. So let us hope some sanity actually comes out there again. Mm-hmm. The way this week's gone,
we're not going to get into that. There's no tech angle. We're just not going to get into that.
No, exactly. Okay, we're going to take a brief pause here. We're going to talk about once again this week in Olio, and this has always been fun. I'm really enjoying that Derek, that you and Olio are doing this or sharing this, because it really kind of goes behind the scenes of what's involved in a modern day agency. All the neat stuff they're doing. I think sometimes people think there's only things that are done by one company and something else does. You guys do a bunch of different things, don't you?
We try to. I mean, the nice thing is we have some really great clients who bring us unique challenges, and therefore we get the opportunity to solve them. So You know, especially on the hardware side, the company is called Olio Digital Labs. We had Brendan Fargainer, one of the business partners there, had every intention of getting into, you know, outside of pure web development. And so a couple years on, we're really getting that opportunity to do so, and we're taking that challenge head on. It's been a lot of fun. So
exactly.
This past week, we wrapped up and launched that SAP Hybris and Sage 300 order gateway we had mentioned, and that custom chime tracking software. Pretty sure that's done, just waiting for final sign-off, so that's good. We helped launch the new Real Sports online store at shop.realsports.ca. Real Sports is actually the retail arm of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. You might have heard of that company. They own the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Toronto Raptors, yes, the Toronto FC, the Toronto Marlies, the Toronto Furies, which is the Canadian Women's Hockey League team.
That's right. Yes.
And, well, they don't own Air Canada Centre or Skydome.
No.
But anyway, they certainly retail many of their wares through, I think, the store at Rogers Centre, Skydome.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
So they've been moved over to Shopify, which is totally fine. But as great as Shopify is, you still can't do everything you want without some custom code. So we were asked to come in and actually do that custom code. They still needed to integrate with Sage for accounting and inventory. They needed to integrate with a marketing automation platform. We got that done. They wanted some pop-up newsletter signups and that sort of thing. We took care of all of that that their team that they have there couldn't do. And we were happy to help. And everything went off without a hitch right before the draft last Friday.
Yeah, it's a very nice website too. I see my long-suffering Leafs have changed their logo for this year.
Yeah, and it's actually really nice.
That's really going to guarantee them the cup.
Well, you know what? I would encourage you to actually read the reasoning behind some very specific design, like why there's 13 veins on the at the top, and why there's 31 overall, and why there's so many points on the leaf itself, and so on. So it's actually really
nice. So the question
is,
does it add up to 49? Because that's how many years it's been since they won the cup. Sorry, I'm not bitter, really. No,
but if they do win the cup again, they will have to add another vein to the top three parts of the leaf, because there's 13 right now for the current number
cups.
Of
okay.
yeah.
No,
for
it's
the current
nice.
Number
I
of
actually,
cups.
I like it. I'm on the site. I'm very impressed. Nice and quick, and it looks really good.
Yeah, it's really nice. So we finally moved our last client, their email, off of an old server that we've been using for a very long time, up in Dashwood, Ontario. Never been, don't worry about it. So that we can actually finally shut down that old server that's been just chugging along for a long time.
So is that server running Pegasus on a 21
modem? No, but it's a Mac OS X server.
Oh, geez.
It's an X serve. There we go. It's an X serve.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But it works. So,
hey,
but yeah,
we go,
it's we needed
like
to get off of it, and so we have. That hardware we ordered week ago, yeah, it started coming in. We got a delivery from Adafruit, and we got some watch battery holders in, some interface connections, that sort of thing. So just a couple pieces. We're still waiting for like literally about 10 more shipments from vendors we found on AliExpress, which is a division of Alibaba. And so I guess we technically just gave Yahoo some money. Good for them. And we got a bunch of new leads this week. Got a bunch of new leads this week. We've got a company who's looking for a mobile app. I actually had a really good time chatting with the person there who brought us that, and figuring out on my own afterwards, like, okay, like, how are we going to do all this? Like, what's the workflow going to be like for the customer and for the other person, blah, blah, blah. So that was cool. And then an online learning platform that's actually really ahead of their industry. So if we get that eventually develop and launch that, I'll be very happy to chat about that a little bit more and what that prospective customer is doing with that. And
excellent.
Yeah, that's about it. Busy week ahead, as usual. And I've got a few proposals to write up and book meetings for, to actually present them, and some more RFPs to respond to over the next few weeks.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's that was this past week in Olio. If you have a project you need some assistance with, web-based, some hardware-based, you know, basically if you need some software development done, just hit up oliodigitallabs.com. That's O-L-I-O digitallabs.com. Feel free to email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at oliodigitallabs.com, or you can call 226-785-0420.
Awesome. And once again, we thank them for their Canadian Tech Podcast. Cool. Okay, moving on. We have our good friends at Dropbox. They've got now a scanning option, a new way to scan documents with your phone and other sharing features. Mm-hmm. I actually updated my client this afternoon when I had this, and I've been trying it. It's actually pretty good. It works. But I'll let you explain it a little bit more, Derek.
Yeah, so basically business users now can scan documents, upload them directly to Dropbox. Reason for that is obviously there's still a lot of activity and business development that happens in the real world. Very much relies on paper, you know, or things like whiteboards. We use lots of whiteboards, sticky notes, other printed pieces of paper, as mentioned by Dropbox. And so they want to take that information that is all analog right now, make it searchable mm-hmm. and more accessible. And so, to that end, Dropbox has actually brought in optical character recognition technology, or also known as OCR for short, mm-hmm. To actually scan the text on the document that you've scanned in, or to try and recognize it. And if, as long as it works, you can actually make it searchable within Dropbox, within the app. And, yeah. You know, the nice thing is that it should synchronize really, really quickly with any other devices you have Dropbox installed on, and instantly makes it shareable if you put it in a folder that you have, you know, shared with a team or with a whole company, what have you. And, yeah, the OCR is great. If it works, that's going to be awesome. certainly we have whiteboards at work, and I took pictures the other day because we need to wipe it down and write other stuff on it. And, you know, we take pictures of our whiteboards all the time, as weird as that may sound to some people, because we need a record of some kind of the things we just wrote down. And, if we opt for a business account with Dropbox, I'm not sure if we have one yet, but if we did, then, we could put that to use.
Yeah, it definitely adds, you know, Dropbox, you know, they're competing in some ways with Evernote and a few other players, and they're realizing this is the way, particularly not just individuals, but small business, and businesses are using Dropbox. One of my previous agency jobs, we had a Dropbox. It was great. We share everything, and I use the service to share between and do to help, you know, to help make, again, make that experience a little bit more seamless. It's going to draw new business to there. And they're definitely wanting to go after, you know, some more of the business market and things like that. It's such a simple service. It works so well. Mm-hmm. It's definitely worth the money. So definitely. So good for them. All right. YouTube, apparently. From what I understand, this is still being launched.
Yes.
Strictly VIP users only, but we will have the ability to live stream right from the YouTube app eventually.
Yeah, this looks really nice. So the interface looks very much heavily inspired by Periscope.
Yes.
So give Periscope props where deserved, because they have YouTube's clearly more or less copying or, you know, emulating a lot of their interface here. But soon you'll be able to get into the YouTube app, go to probably your profile or, you know, the upload area, hit a big red button, as Stuart said, and start. You get a couple of options here. You get to name your live stream, whether it's public, unlisted, or private, whether or not mm-hmm. you want to allow chat, just like Periscope, and whether or not you want to notify your subscribers right away. In most cases, I would say public, allow chat, and notify. Yes, yes, and yes, to make the most of this. But even if it's like a family thing, you know, you could use this for that. So they looks like they launched it at VidCon, which did happen this past week. I know of a few online personalities that were at VidCon. And according to YouTube's blog posts, these live videos will have all the features your regular videos have, like search, recommendations, controls for who can view them, and so on. And yeah, I think this is going to be really, really neat.
I think it's really good.
Looking forward to it.
I like the concept. I like the concept, particularly for, you know, in the past, it saves you some production time. Uh-huh. When I have on the side, I have a channel. Sometimes I do some model building videos or hobby videos. And right now I've been using, you know, I'll use just my iPhone and the video thing, but then I have to save the video, convert it, throw it up into YouTube. So this would be nice. It immediately saves it and away you go. It depends what you're looking for. I know the live people are really good. Sometimes when I do some other stuff, I want to do some editing. But for the live thing, again, it's going to make it nice and easy to do. And, you know, they're competing with you. They're competing with YouTube. No, that's them. They're competing with Facebook and some of the other players, as you say.
And Facebook Twitter. Players.
Yeah. And Twitter. Everyone's going video. Just make sure, kids, your phone is on a Wi-Fi network, or you've got a really nice, healthy data plan.
Yes. Yeah. You're gonna want that 6 gigabyte plan from Rogers and Bell and Telus or whatever.
We would say we would say you want that unlimited one, but we are in Canada, so
yeah, if you're wealthy enough, go for it. But chances are you're not.
No, and if you are wealthy enough, send us an email and we'll help you.
Yes, for a fee.
For a fee, exactly. So there you go. Okay, so moving on from live stream video to a live aircraft.
Something that should have been live streamed.
Exactly. Solar Impulse 2. It's been slowly but surely making its way around the world. Mm-hmm. It's basically an aircraft powered by solar.
The sun.
So because of that, it doesn't really go that quick. It's not going to be breaking any speed records anytime soon.
No.
But it did complete the first solar-powered Atlantic flight this week. Fill us in a bit more on this.
So, it actually landed in Seville after taking off from New York 3 days before. Not a short flight. But that's 6,765 kilometers. It's done in 71 hours and 8 minutes, powered by the sun with a pilot. So it's not like it was just a super, tiny aircraft. It's actually a massive aircraft, big, huge wingspan, lots of solar, wingspan completely covered in solar panels, of course. And actually anything that faces up is covered in solar panels. And to maximize the efficiency, of course. This is actually an around-the-world flight. It's making its way back around the world to Abu Dhabi. It has two pilots that actually take turns, and that Atlantic hop was made by a pilot named Bertrand Picard. It's his longest flight in the Solar Impulse 2, and another gentleman who did the Nagoya, Japan to Hawaii leg still has the record for the longest ever solo flight, the poor guy, at 8,924 kilometers, over 117 hours, almost 118 hours last July.
I'm looking at a schematic of the plane, and the thing actually has a slightly wider wingspan than a 747. I just hope there's a bathroom in there, because 117 hours is a long time to gotta hold it.
It is. And so really what you're looking at is, a plane with a 72-meter wide wingspan, Boeing 747, 68.5, so by 3.5 meters more. Yep. The Solar Impulse has Solar Impulse 2 has a wider wingspan, four propellers to propel it along. And I don't know what the implications are, but I mean, really what we're proving here is you can make this work. The photovoltaic cells, the solar panels, power four 14 kilowatt electric motors, equivalent of 17.4 horsepower. That's cool. It topped up four 41 kilowatt hour lithium ion batteries. I wish I had a battery that big for my phone. Jeez.
Heavy to lug around though.
Yeah. Top speed of 49 knots, which is about 90 kilometers an hour. Cruising speed at night, 60 kilometers an hour or 33 knots. So clearly not fast, but doable and really pushing the technology along and, you know, showing further that we can really further rely on quote unquote green energies, not burning fossil fuels. And if we can get, there was some research a little while ago about possibly pushing the common solar panel efficiency from about 18 to 20% up to 34%. And if that we can keep nice. Increasing that number, even slowly, if not exponentially, you know, you could either push this device faster or the Solar Impulse 3, you could make it go faster, you could put more cargo inside, what have you. And if we keep it going, we might finally see a day where this is the norm, at least for small, you know, regional jets and that sort of thing, even if we never get there with like Airbus, you know, 70 or a Boeing 777, the Dreamliner or anything like that. So yeah, very, very exactly. Cool. It didn't stop in Canada. Sorry. There's really no Canadian specific angle to this, except that of course one day we may have planes in Canada with solar panels on top instead of, gas.
Exactly. Avgas. And it's cool.
It's and cool it is anyway, cool. So. It's very cool.
If it's cool, we'll still cover it.
That's right.
Okay. Also, speaking of cool and speaking of, you know, here's one thing if you're in the plane without Wi-Fi,
yes.
Netflix online viewing, and apparently it could launch by the end of the year, according to our friends at Mobile Syrup.
Yeah, and they took this from Light Reading Gizmodo. So credit where it's due. But apparently they're looking to, Netflix is looking to launch offline viewing by the end of the year. So obviously you're not going to need this all the time, or if you can't get an internet connection at all to even, you know, cache the download. But if you can, you're flying somewhere, you're at home the night before, you want to queue up a few videos that are, you know, you got a big cache or a big hard drive on there, that would be great. They're certainly going to run into issues with copyright and what rights they've actually licensed from the content providers right now. Yeah, so it might have to be done on like a studio by studio basis. That wouldn't be great, but we have to all understand that this is not Netflix's fault. If they could have done this 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they would have by now.
Right.
So, but yeah, at least it sounds like they're moving forward with it, and Ganesh willing. They'll be able to make the deals to get it done.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully. Okay, before we hit our local story, one more. Canada Post, like Amazon, our good friends at Canada Post, they're mulling drones for mail delivery. I don't know whether to be celebrating this or be horrified.
Well, the posties might be going on strike soon. So
yeah,
at least for certain situations, this could be great. And I think really where this might play out well is in more rural areas where, especially on snow days or even on, statutory holidays where you're waiting for like a light parcel or something. This could be great because then no offense to, you know, male men and male women, but, yeah, you deserve your days off. I'm not saying you don't, but sometimes you have packages that need to get there. Crucially, and if Canada Post can help with that sort of thing, licensed drones and good pilots, and you know, they can follow all the regulations that you don't have to worry about. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a good thing. I can't help, you know, thinking we talk about art predating life and vice versa. There was an old Warner Brothers cartoon, and I think it was Bugs Bunny. And it had like, he woke up in the future, seriously, and it had the little robot on the little helicopter. It would basically, you know, it came down, little arm came out, knocked on the door, and gave him the little envelope. I'm remembering that. And I'm just wondering, and if I can find the link, I'll throw it in, what the name of the cartoon was. But I do remember that. And I'm wondering if someone in their deep, dark past and their subconscious, you know, the people that are thought about this for Amazon and for Canada Post was remembering something from their childhood.
Robot so. Rabbit.
Was it Robot Rabbit? Thank you.
Maybe.
Imagine Elmer, if we had the internet who could, you know.
Elmer Fudd is shown as a carrot farmer going about his business. He realizes Bugs has joined his singing. Bugs dives into the hole. Carrots fly in the air. This is when he disguises himself as a female robot.
Right. No, that wasn't it. I'll find it eventually. But it was like a Warner Brothers thing, you know. You know, maybe one of our audience can tell us, you know, if we were This Week in Tech, we'd have a chat room, we'd have the answer answer already. But yeah, it was something similar. I remember when these were first announced on Amazon, that's exactly what I thought about. Was something like that, and you know how life imitates our art. So yeah, it'll be interesting. But as I said, I'll find it eventually, because you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm gonna have to find it now. So you know, it's a good thing we have something that will let me search for that.
No, unfortunately, Canada Post is saying that this is really just a paper exercise. It's the very early exploratory stages. And they're examining what's out there today. So like DJI Phantoms probably, and, you know, capacities and certainly regulations and things like that. So I say, Canada Post, if you can make it happen, then, man, I will send everything I can through Canada Post. This would be really, really good. Forget Amazon. Forget Google. If Canada Post can get there first or make it work great first, that's great. Go for it.
Yeah. Exactly. So, good. Okay, let's move on to our local story. And this was a story our good friends at Ellipsis Digital at the Roundhouse and that. They hosted Premier of Ontario Kathleen Wynne and Minister Deb Matthews basically for an announcement about a document about helping to ease the skill shortage and the workforce of tomorrow. And it's, you know, basically they had some people there and most of them, and even, you know, let's just say, you know, the article says Dave Bilson, Ellipsis Digital president, asked fellow tech entrepreneurs how many have trouble finding and recruiting staff. And most everyone's hand shot up. So there's still an issue there. And they're basically, you know, what they're talking about is trying to improve the programs, you know, coming out of the school, experimental learning co-ops, stuff like that, promoting traditional and non-traditional career paths, more investments in training programs. So, you know, it's stuff we've heard before, but again, it's a good thing. There still seems to be high demand. I know, Derek, you know, your company's in that phase too, where some find new people, and it's sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, we're happy with the team we have right now. We're not actively looking, but certainly if somebody fantastic comes along and wants a job, we, you know, I'm sure the partners, the business partners would make an attempt to find time, money, et cetera, to make a space for that person, because, you know, we don't want to lose them. I could have told everybody this when I finished college in 2004.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Like, this is not new. This is not new at all. And I think the big problem is that, especially in web development, what you see the schools focus on is still very old school in a lot of cases.
Right.
Like a lot of, oh, you're going to need to head out there and build desktop apps. And it's like, yeah, but like that's certainly going to happen. You're going to run into jobs where you're going to need to build desktop software, but not nearly as often anymore as web-based software. And then they're like, okay, well, you know, Fanshawe, for instance, okay, we're gonna teach kids HTML and CSS and Java. I'm like, oh God, give it up on the Java. And you know, but then they don't focus on the programs that are actually in use across most of Southwestern Ontario, if not most of Canada. Like there are, what we've noticed is that there are very specific pockets where languages get taken up and become super popular. Chicago is actually a really big Ruby area, Ruby on Rails.
Right.
London, Kitchener, Waterloo, Toronto, PHP. PHP is king around here. Every shop I know uses PHP and maybe JavaScript. There's a few local shops that use Java exclusively as well. I used to work for one of them. But you know, like, so it's like, oh, you go to Fanshawe and you're like, are you teaching these kids PHP? And they're like, no, why do we need to do that? And you're like, because that's what we use. Like that's the language of choice around here. And so that gets really frustrating, but, you know, if they're going to listen more to employers, well, feel free to reach out. We're here. We're happy to talk with you and tell you what we need over the next few years. But personally, I've never been in a place where the schools are actually reaching out actively, as opposed to just waiting for employers to give them feedback. And so it'd be nice if they were a little bit more proactive, because we're not always thinking, oh, well, I'm going to go to Fanshawe and make sure that they know that we need people with PHP skills or with JavaScript skills or what have you. Where, right. You know, unfortunately, they need to get that conversation started, and then we can keep it going. So, yeah, apparently ZTR needs 5 people. Good luck. Genuinely, good luck finding finding those folks. I hope you guys find them soon. And I've heard this before. I could have said this. I could have saved them a lot of time and told them this 12 years ago when I finished college.
And I think part of the thing, and I've noticed too, is that, you know, a lot of times people, and again, not the fault of the companies, but they're looking for experienced people.
Yeah.
A lot of I see these ads. I see 3 to 5 years of experience required. Well, the problem is, and it was a similar problem with the apprenticeship programs, there's a lot of people, you know, that were in previous careers in industry. They've been told, oh, go learn coding, go learn programming. Mm-hmm. Well, then they do that. They spend the time and money. They come out and they can't find anything because no one's looking for juniors.
Yeah.
And that's still a really big issue. Now, I know some companies try and do some stuff by that, like by doing co-ops and stuff like that. And quite often people are hired that way. But,
yeah,
you know, I still think, and I remember years ago, I got an article in the Free Press on this. I remember talking about this. It's a big thing where, you know, sometimes, yeah, you may be looking for someone with 3 to 5, but a lot of times with technology, people can learn quickly.
Of course.
They can get up to speed quickly. And it's, you know, it's kind of unfortunate. We've seen it a lot in the trades. The apprenticeship programs have similar problems. They've got companies unwilling to take the first and second year apprentices, and then they're wondering why they can't find third and fourth ones. Well, that's because these first and second year, they can't find anything, so they eventually have to switch to another career.
Yeah. Yeah, and I should back up a little bit and say we're not always looking for specifically people with PHP skills. We're looking for really good programmers who, yeah, you know, can learn PHP. That's really the focus. So right. I'm not sure specifically what ZTR is looking for or what our attraction, who is the mm-hmm. umbrella company for Ellipsis Digital and Engine 7.4, are looking for. Ultimately, we're looking for really great programmers, developers at Olio when we do look. And if they have some PHP experience, that's obviously a bonus. And certainly our last hire was actually already using PHP, and it was using the framework that we focus on using, which is called Laravel. He came with it all, and so it was really easy to hire him. But that's not a necessity. So
right, exactly. So there we go. All righty. So that's all our stories. Now we're going to turn to stuff we like. Derek, why don't you go ahead and start this week?
Sure. So I came across OpenVid on Product Hunt. I love Product Hunt. It's like my Reddit. I know lots of people who browse Reddit every day. I browse Product Hunt almost every day because I love seeing what other people are coming up with. And so OpenVid is it's actually a Google Chrome extension. And the whole point of it is that it is a really easy way for anyone to quickly record their screen, microphone, and if you want, your front-facing camera on while you're looking at any web page. So you could easily do some quality assurance testing on your mock-ups. You could give feedback to a friend on their website. You could create a quick tutorial for your product. Basically, OpenVid will let you do any of those things and lots of other use cases. And you can do that all for free without having to worry about video storage, upload time, or recording time limits. Which is really, really nice. They're looking to monetize in other ways beyond those core features that people are always looking for. Like, I don't need just a 5-minute time limit. I need to make a 30-minute thing, but I need to do it like one time. I don't want to pay $100 for software. OpenVid is solving that adoption problem right away. And I'm pretty sure last time I checked the website, they said that they are going to focus on other ways to monetize the product. So certainly they have ideas on how to monetize, which is great because it means they're in it for the long term. And And I haven't used it yet, but it looks really, really cool. I saw a lot of good feedback on Product Hunt, and I'm looking forward to using it for a whole bunch of things.
Cool. Okay. It looks interesting as well. I'm going to definitely download it and play around with it. Okay, mine this week, and I, as longtime listeners know, I was very annoyed when Twitter, after they bought TweetDeck, they decided to get rid of the Windows client off for the Windows platform. So it meant if I wanted to use TweetDeck, which I really enjoy using, I had to do it from a browser tab, and that was kind of annoying just because it's not a separate client. Like, it's not a separate, you know, it was just a pain when I was task switching in between and stuff like that. So enter called Tweetin, and what they've done is they've actually done it's basically a skin on the existing TweetDeck client plugin for Chrome. But what it does is it does render as a separate window. So it looks like a separate app. It looks pretty well like a nicely cleaned up version of TweetDeck. You use your existing, you know, TweetDeck or Twitter login to do it. And it's a really nice product. Again, it's one of those things Twitter did I never kind of understood, because they left the client in for the Apple, for the Mac OS. We still have it as a separate client there. Mm-hmm. But for Windows, it was a real pain in the you-know-what. So this has been nice. I discovered this last week. Once in a while, keep searching for something, and I found this. So I've been running it they still call it in beta, 64 and 32-bit versions, and actually a couple of different other clients as well, but I'm very impressed with it so far. It's pretty good. There's the odd time it's a little bit. I think it's, again, because it's having to go back through Chrome and all that good stuff. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm pretty impressed. But the other neat thing is there's basically for Windows, OS X, Chrome, or even Edge, for those of you who like Microsoft's latest browser. So
yeah,
still considered a beta. Yeah, still considered a beta, but I've been playing with it. It hasn't crashed on me or anything. And it's you know, it is kind of neat. Some of the icons are a little bit different, like for retweets and likes. They actually put a giant, like, they put the person's little icon, but it's kind of ghosted behind. And then you see either the retweet symbol or the like symbol. So that's a little bit different. So it means at a glance I don't just recognize right away, oh, because I know people's avatars. Mm-hmm. I have to read, again, first world problem, I got to read the title. but no, you know what? I'm pretty impressed with it so far. And I'm actually impressed. And I definitely recommend for those of you having similar dilemmas and woes as I did, give it a try, because it's one less thing you will bitch to your co-host about.
Yeah, I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear him complain anymore. All right, so just like, come on. No, that's fine. I live to hear Stuart complain about stuff.
Well, and also the same with you. We do that to each other. Right. We each have our bag of popcorn, and then we just mute our mouth, sit back, have some popcorn, and ranting commence. Okay, we got a brand new thing, and this is Derek's idea.
Yeah, okay. So I just want to give people a little tiny bit of insight into other things we're doing beyond the podcast. The week in Olio was good, you know, but that's a sponsorship. So
wait, are you implying we have lives?
No, I just sit in front of Firefox, which I've just started reusing lately. I give up on Vivaldi. So I'm back with Firefox for some things. And yeah, I just stare at the old reader all week, looking for stuff across Ars Technica, TechCrunch, London Free Press, etc. I just do that all week. Yeah. I just look for podcast stories, because we're making millions.
Yeah, I knew it.
Yeah.
Okay, so what have you been up to lately, Derek?
So other parts of my life, I've been diversifying Clever Host's SSL certificate offerings over the last couple of days. I've gotten fed up with Komodo and the way they're treating the Let's Encrypt open source initiative, and some of the other problems they've been having over the last couple of years.
Right.
The CEO seems like a real D-bag too, especially over this Let's Encrypt issue, where they're trying to trademark Let's Encrypt, which it's like, that's a thing already. It's been a thing for like 2 or 3 years. Leave it alone. So I'm moving away from Komodo as much as I can, as inexpensive as their certificates are, and that's great. I'm trying to be done with them. So Clever Host is offering Rapid SSL, Thought, THAWTESSL search as well. I've been looking at doing this for a while, but I've been reinvigorated lately, and I have a lot more energy than I thought I did. And so I'm looking to launch a dedicated SSL certificate vending website sometime in the next few months. I've been really busy coaching my son's soccer team since May, which is actually going really, really well. I'm having a great time. There's no official standings or scores taken, so I can't actually tell you that we're doing well, but we're doing well. and the boys are having a lot of fun. It's an under eight boys team. Yeah, they're all having tons of fun. And of course, they're having way more fun when they're scoring lots of goals than they are when they're not scoring lots of goals. So they
you know
still
what I love about soccer,
that.
About that age?
What?
It's like watching a little swarm of bees. You know, they all just change.
Oh, no, we're past that point.
I still think that's cute. I love that.
You're thinking of like U6, like Timbit soccer.
Okay.
Yes, for sure. That
all
still happens
still
all the time.
Cute.
Yeah, it's like a nucleus. It's just, you know, all these electrons, not positrons, electrons, protons, neutrons, all surrounding the nucleus and just like, it's a very heavy element because there's lots of them. So.
And there's usually a kid, you know, bored out of his skull and then looking the wrong way in goal when the time to get down there.
Yeah,
you
know, picking the grass.
No, it's...
Yeah, no,
it's good fun.
It's a little bit better than that. The boys actually play positions. They know their positions. We rotate them often. We get like three or four kids playing goal throughout the game so that nobody's bored for a very long time. And the nice thing is for the team is they know as soon as the ball gets in our zone and it's been in there a little bit too long for my liking, I'll coach and say, come on boys, let's get it out. You know, Coach Derek doesn't like the ball in our zone, let's go. And so unfortunately our goalie is often, whoever it happens to be, is often quite bored because Coach Derek focuses on not letting the ball get into our zone, letting the ball get to our net. So but that just means I'm producing strong defenders and strong forwards who can back check, to use a hockey term. So yeah, that's all.
Well, this might be good. You might have a new career. The way some of the Euro Cup teams were performing, it maybe use some coaching changes.
Hungary, I'm happy to help.
I'm not going to name names to protect
England. England's still in it, so we really can't fault them.
We can't.
Wales is out now, right? No, wait, Wales is in. They beat. Oh, who'd they beat? They beat Ireland. Did they beat Republic of Ireland? Yes,
possibly. Yes,
yes. France beat Northern Ireland, so all of the Irish could be equally pissed.
Exactly. Well,
united
you know, all,
for once.
All that means is there'll be peace at the pub tonight.
Yes, there will be. Protestants and Catholics alike are all just drinking and moaning over their respective national teams' losses.
And for once they can plot. They probably already plotting against the English after this week. So we won't get into that.
No, we're not.
Exactly.
Oh, and once soccer season's done, I'm looking at volunteering with a nonprofit here in the area. If that pans out, I'll let you guys all know about it.
Awesome. Good stuff. Well, as for me, as most people know, we recently moved, so we're still slowly but surely unpacking the house. I've actually got, like last week, I got the base computer desk up, and we had a hardwire connection this week. I got the hobby desk set up slowly but surely. A lot of work still with the library board. I'm vice chair of the London Public Library. We've got a big capital campaign starting soon. And, of course, this podcast as well. So a little bit shorter, but that's what's going to be happening. So before we finish, we just want to remind people, make sure you review us on iTunes, Pocket Casts, wherever else you get your podcasts, RTR tweets. You'll notice our Twitter account's pretty busy. It's quite often Derek doing it. Like he said, he does his reviews and he retweets, but I try and get one in there too. And don't forget to tell a friend about us because, you know, the more the merrier. So, yeah, anything else I missed there, Derek, you can think of?
I don't think so. What was I going to say? You said you want... Oh, so one thing we're going to try, we just talked about it just before
the
podcast, we're going to try is just doing like really short, like probably under a minute videos about semi-big stories we want to give some perspective on, some analysis, etc., but we might not cover on the podcast in detail or at all. So you can look forward to, on Twitter certainly, maybe some other platforms, something else we were just talking about.
We're actually going to look about a Facebook group.
Okay, well, I wasn't going to say the name specifically.
I was going to say, because that way this way I have to do it.
This way you have to do it, yeah.
Because I get hassled if I don't.
So Stuart's going to...
There are thousands of fans.
Yeah, so Stuart's going to create a Facebook page, not group.
Page.
Okay.
Yes.
And so we'll be able to do maybe some Facebook Live. We'll be able to do Periscope. Well, we can already do Periscope through the Twitter account. But regardless, look for us to get into video a little bit. You can see our ugly mugs up there soon. And and offering a little bit of extra insight throughout the week so that you don't have to wait until Monday.
You know what we're going to have to do? We'll just have to put Jameson up now and again. He can be the pretty boy of our little triad.
I will say, hey, if you want to be on the podcast, we're happy to have a third. Just send us an email. Send us a tweet. Email is contact@canadiantechpodcast.ca. That also goes for advertisers who want to advertise on the podcast. But yeah, if you want to give us some feedback, if you want to be on the show, we're happy to have you. Shoot us an email or tweet at us at @techpodcast_ca, is that right?
Yes. So.
Yes.
And also don't forget, there will be times we may contact you, especially previous podcast hosts. You may get harassed coming soon. So
yeah, that's definitely going to happen soon.
We definitely. So for all you people, there'll be a few people out there going, "Oh shoot,
Batista." Yeah,
there's a few out there. Well, you know, he also just started a brand new job, so we want to hear all about that. He's into science now.
Yeah, he's got his PhD in I'm not sure if it's in psychology.
Yes.
So certainly he knows stuff.
He knows stuff. Yeah. We got to get him on just for that. So exactly. Yeah. I am so going to tweet out his username when I tweet out the show, and he's going to get worried. He's going to have to listen.
Yeah.
He's
done the show before, so it wouldn't be the first time. So anyway, if you want to be on the show, we're happy to have a third on here. So just let us know.
Okay. So for episode 76 of the Canadian Tech Podcast for Sunday, June 26, sponsored by Oleal Digital Labs, my name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Thank you and be well.